Yeah, I was saying that with 24 members, I just can't imagine that it becomes better, except in that it might be more representative. That's good, so that anything it does might be seen as more legitimate, and I don't see it doing more. We'll just have to wait and see how that turns out. What I don't know is whether the stain of oil for food will ever go away. Whether people will say one day, oh, we must have been wrong about that Kofi Annan. It seems he was a decent guy after all. He was being beaten up by right-wing ideologues. He really was an honest and good leader who headed the UN at an extraordinary time in its history, and really was the right man for the job. Came from a place no one expected, the Secretariat. Came as a result of extraordinary political circumstance where a U.S. Secretary of State hated a Secretary General who hated her back, and who, in any case, was perhaps the wrong man for the wrong time. And there he was. And isn't it great that we got him? And isn't it great that he brought to the organization the intimate knowledge of it that no previous Secretary General had, and was able to exploit that for its general improvement at a time when history was giving it a more and more important role to play.
Now, in just a few minutes, I want to go to one quite specific instance of Kofi Annan's achievement. Going back to the Iraq weapons of mass destruction inspection era, he had an early triumph, at least it was called a triumph, when he went to see Saddam Hussein in order to try to alleviate the crisis over the access for inspectors. And at that time, it was indeed seen as a great triumph that he had managed to prevent a military operation by the Americans and the British, at least, against Iraq. Two questions. First, as spokesman, were you given any guidance as to how to handle this particular trip that the Secretary General made? Secondly, do you think he or were you aware that within UNSCOM itself there was considerable disillusionment with the Secretary General because of what he had done with Saddam Hussein?
I was kept pretty well informed on the Secretary General's preparations for the trip. I knew that the Catholic Cardinal of New York was on the phone to him, that religious leaders all over the world were appealing to him, that he was feeling that he somehow had some moral obligation to act on behalf of the millions of people who were demonstrating in the streets against military action, and of course this is what the UN is there for. On the other hand, he realized that the politics of the thing were extremely complex, and he could be digging his grave. He called the Security Council together in his conference room. I don't know how many secretaries general did that before. I think this was one of the first times this was done. And he said, I want to go to Iraq. I think the right thing is to go to Iraq, but I'm not going without guidelines from you. You tell me what the area of negotiation you want to impose on me. And it was most extraordinary. They wouldn't give it to him in writing. And in the end, the Brits slipped him a piece of paper, unofficially, saying, here's what you can do. And in Iraq, I was with him. Madeleine Albright was on the phone to him at 4 o'clock in the morning, screaming at him. Screaming at him. There was so much at stake. And I got very little guidance there. I was following it as best I could. And I remember there were like 300 journalists, 150 TV cameras outside his residence when we got the news that a deal was accepted. And they said, you know, just go out and say that we've come to, you know, an agreement with Saddam Hussein government, Iraq, but don't take any questions. I said, I can't do that. So I went out and I said, we have a deal. And I took 20 questions, 25 questions. I just weaved and bobbed. They didn't, I mean, we have a deal was the news. That's what, the rest was just filling, and so it didn't matter whether I gave them much substance beyond that or not, but I needed to talk to them. And then they went away and filed, then they came back, and I kept going out until it was nighttime, going out, taking them 50 at the time, and talking to them. By this time, they saw that I was feeding this beast, and I was earning my salary, and didn't matter too much to them what I was saying. They were all distracted by other things. It bought time, and what we knew, what I understood had to happen, was that the Americans had to say, okay, we're going to let Saddam off the hook. We're going to say, okay, that's it, sanctions are off, and now you behave or else we'll nuke you or something, you know, but the sanctions regime just didn't seem to be viable. And of course, oil for food was one of the things that gave it viability and more life. But if the Americans weren't going to soften up on Saddam in the coming months, then we knew that this whole thing was for nothing. And instead of softening up, they turned harder and eventually prepared the way for military action. So I think we knew at the time it was a band-aid. It was hard not to be exhilarated by the warmth. It was more than warmth. It was almost hysteria. The reception he got when he returned. There was that political error he made in saying, I can do business with Saddam Hussein, and the conservatives in the U.S. Congress never forgave him for that. Am I surprised that some in UNSCOM, you had all kinds of people in UNSCOM, including, you know, government operatives from all over the place, and it was governments, it was many governments that didn't want Kofi Annan to do this, so I wouldn't be surprised that there were people in UNSCOM who didn't want him to do it either, who were so intent on destroying these weapons that Saddam supposedly had, including by taking military action if necessary. No, it doesn't surprise me.
But it wasn't on your mind at the time?
No.
I mean, actually, nobody from UNSCOM was included in the delegation at all, which was rather significant. But that was not something that was in your mind as spokesman or that you had to explain.
No. And I don't remember any journalist asking me about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Final question. Fred, looking to the future, do you have suggestions, you have thoughts as to how the whole outreach program of the United Nations, the media, but even beyond that, can be improved? Do you have suggestions? You're heard.
I suspect that as we get more into the big leagues of political action, we're going to have to get more sophisticated at delivering the message. So that I think someone like Mark Malik Brown is perfectly suited to this kind of new United Nations that's playing with the big guys, where the playing gets rough. I would like the spokesman's office to be isolated from that message delivery. In the spokesman's reunion, you heard Michael Gordon of the New York Times say that the spokesmen in Washington today have no credibility at all. They're all trying to deliver a message. He said, we know what the message is. What we need is information. And so I would like the spokesman's office to be kept out of that message delivery loop, and just to help journalists write informed, accurate articles about the United Nations. On the other hand, I think we may have to play dirty at Mark Malik Brown's level. Not even playing dirty. I remember 2 years ago, Secretary General was going to speak to the opening of the General Assembly. Bush was going to speak on the same day, within the same hour, practically. And Edward Mortimer said, why don't we put the Secretary General's speech out the day before, so the journalist can write about his speech on the day of delivery and Bush's speech on the next day. And we did that. Well, the White House was furious. We had gotten sophisticated on the communications management side, and we had scooped their boss, and they were very unhappy with that. Well, I think that's what politicians do everywhere, and that's maybe what we need to do a bit more as far as the speeches, the timing of the speeches, the picking location of the speeches, and anything Mark Malik Brown can do to talk to journalists on behind the scenes and try to shape the message. But they already know that he's a spinmeister, but he's a quotable spinmeister. So they like him. He's good for their work. He gives them good quotes, but they realize that not everything he says is true. Whereas what I try for this office is to give it to them straight. And when the Fox News guy yesterday in the noon briefing said, you're trying to spin this a certain way, that drives me crazy. When people on the 38th floor say, we need to spin this a certain way, I stop them dead in the tracks and say, sorry, Kofi Annan doesn't spin. It's not what he wants his press people to do. He has a straight, honest relationship with the press, and we don't spin because spin assumes deception. And you can't have a credible press operation based on deception. So, yes, I realize we're taking our lumps because we're not sophisticated enough in message management and in doing sharp maneuvers like releasing the Secretary General's speech a day in advance. And we probably need to do more than that, but no, please don't contaminate the spokesman's office with those kinds of hijinks. I think it undermines the organization and the Secretary General.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
I think that's very wise. I tell you, I don't...